You're listening to a Sunday service podcast from First Universalist Church of Minneapolis. We're a faith community committed to racial justice, a place where we practice a deep and authentic welcome, where we listen deeply to where love is calling us next, and a place where, with humility, courage, and compassion, we act for justice in the world. To learn more, please visit us online at firstuniversalistchurch.org.
The mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Will you join me? Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. We need some strong beat keepers. You may keep the beat here. You may keep the beat here if you wish. You may keep the beat here. Good. One more time. Listen. Gathered here in the mystery of the... Your turn. Gathered here in the mystery of the... Our next one. Gathered here in one strong... Your turn. Gathered here in one strong... Now, gathered here in the struggle and the power. Your turn. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Last line is Spirit, draw near. Your turn. Spirit, draw near. Good. That beat is nice and strong, everybody. That's fantastic. Ah, it's so stable. Feels grounded. Every single one. Good. If this feels really comfortable to you, stay right here. The rest of us are going to go on to something else to fancify your beat. But you keep that stable rhythm, right? So even if I go... Good. You got it. You got it. Okay. Who wants to join me here? Let's try it. Here we go. Gathered. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body. Gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Who's on this with me? Yep. Good. Yes. Keep it going. Nice. Okay, if either one of those parts feels good to you, stay right there. If you're still not feeling the adventure, come along with me. Oh, there we go. One more time. Gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered. gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near. Last time, gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near, gathered here, gathered here in the mystery of the hour. Gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power. Spirit, draw near.
Last time, Spirit, draw near.
Spirit, draw near.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Wow, look at all you people who braved the snow. If you got here at 11 o'clock or earlier, I strongly recommend that you just take a moment to look around and see how much the congregation has grown in the last 3 minutes. It was delightful sitting back there watching you all come in, brushing the snow off. We can't let a little bit of snow keep us away, can we? No. You shoveled. Yeah, and I think we're gonna shovel a few more. Are there people online with us this morning? Oh yeah. How many folks are with us online? How many? 35 people. Okay, so let's wave at the cameras. Hi, everybody online. Well, 35 devices, so that's probably like 80 people. Yeah. Church math, come on. Good morning, friends. My name is Reverend Arif Mamdani. I'm one of the ministers here, and it is such a joy to be with you all this morning. We are joined in worship this morning by so many people that are helping to make this service possible. I want to say some thank yous, some words of acknowledgement and gratitude. First of all, to Sheshton for arranging our flowers and birds. If you happen to, is Sheshton here? No, and I didn't see her in the first service either. So if you happen to see her, let her know that, you know, this is amazing. If you find yourself zoning out at any point in the service, just bring your mind back to one of these birds here. There's a lot going on up here, and you can use that as a place to anchor back into where we are in time and space. Want to say a huge thank you to the folks back in the sound and AV booth for making all of this possible. You know, there was a lot about COVID-19 that really sucked, but one of the great benefits has been the way that it has forced us to figure out how to be connected across time and space. In fact, a couple of years ago, we sang that song, Gathered Here, and we changed the words a little bit to say far and near in one strong body, as we are today, gathered here, gathered online, and gathered with all of the people that will listen to this service or watch it on YouTube in the days and the weeks and the months to come. Also helping to lead worship this morning, we have Reverend Ashley Harness, Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout, Malia, who is one of our worship associates, and Vivian, helping to light our chalice in just a moment. And in particular, I got a question. How many of y'all were here Thursday evening for the first choir rehearsal in some time? Yeah, I see some hands. Can you all just like rise up as you are feeling moved? There's a photo of even more of them, but I was given very explicit instructions to embarrass you all in some way. Was that embarrassing enough? Yeah, we could do a little bit better. Okay, let's try it again. Woohoo! And folks online, we need you to cheer so loudly that we can hear it here at 3400 DuPont. Oh, you hear that? They're there. There is so much excitement and enthusiasm. And if for whatever reason You were not able to join on Thursday. If you forgot to sign up, choir, it's the place to be. Thursdays, 7 to 9 o'clock, you can still sign up and join. There's a link up there. There's a link on your screens. There's a link on our website. So as we settle in, I invite you to put down what you're holding. Allow your gaze to soften. To offer ourselves and each other the soft gaze that you would offer to a child, a beloved family member. This gentle kindness that when we feel it, it brings a little smile to our lips. And I invite you to let the space of that smile just radiate through your body, warming us, warming the space around us. And as you do that, we can move this into our practice of taking three breaths. At your own pace, if you feel moved, allowing your out-breath to be just a second or two longer than your in-breath. As we allow, the warmth of that gentle kindness to move through our bodies. To move through our breath and our words as Vivian helps us to light our chalice. Would you help to light our chalice? And will you all join in the words for lighting our chalice? Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant. To dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And as this covenant, as this blessing for love and for care continues to move through us, move into the space amongst us and out into the wider world, it is from that sort of warm-heartedness that I wish a special greeting to our siblings and family members who are observing Ramadan this season. Although I didn't grow up an observant Muslim, that is the tradition that my dad's side of the family comes from. That is the tradition that many still practice. And I have been recalling these last few weeks what my ministry mentor, Abi, reminded me of around this time last year. He said, Arif, fasting is in your bones, as it is with the practices that are in our lineage, even if we ourselves aren't actively practicing them. So it didn't entirely surprise me these last weeks in this season of Ramadan that I was gripped by this incredibly powerful longing to be with my Muslim cousins, nieces, nephews, aunts and uncles, most of whom live in Toronto, observing and celebrating this year. Fasting, as I have come to learn through a little bit of fasting of my own and through conversations with family members and relatives, is undertaken partially as a means to cleanse one's body, to seek a physical experience of being cleared out and purified as part of drawing closer to the divine. What is also true is that when fasting, one gains a significantly deeper and more embodied awareness of one's mortality. Day after day of fasting, of experiencing hunger and thirst, one cannot help but know more acutely the thinness of the thread that is our aliveness. And so with all of that moving in my heart this season, I've been wondering what it means that Ramadan sits so close to Easter. Another important tradition within this community, within Unitarian Universalism, and within the country that we live in. What does it mean that two siblings of the same God observe rituals that compel their followers toward rituals and practices that make us think about our mortality as well as our rebirth, all in the same season, all in the same cycle? Where is our place here, today, in this renewing renewal of which we are all a part? Come, let us worship together.
This morning, we're talking about our bodies and how in life and in death, we are connected to every single thing that has ever existed. We are made of the same matter, the same stuff of everything in the universe. And we think about how even after our lives end through death, we return to the earth, some of us through ash, some of us through being decomposed in the earth, returning to the soil, continuing to nourish that which then nourishes all sorts of other lives. We are so connected to one another because of our bodies, because of what we are made of. So if we're connected to every single thing in the entire universe that exists now or has ever existed, what's something we're connected to? Shout it out. What are we connected to?
Bananas.
Dinosaurs. Snow.
Tornadoes.
Chickens. Peace in Gaza. Monkeys. Raptors. Yeah. Girl Scout cookies. Lettuce. Chairs, flowers, everything, koalas, everything that has ever existed. At the last service, we got mac and cheese. Yes, we're connected to mac and cheese. We're connected to every single thing that ever has existed and that ever will exist in our lives and in our death. This morning, I'd like to share with you a song that I wrote. It's very geniusly titled The Universe Song and is about the universe. And what I really hope to get across is this idea that we're all so deeply connected. We cannot be separated, not from one another, and we cannot be separated from anything else in this whole universe that is and ever has been. So I'm going to sing this song, but it's a responsive song, so you have two roles. So we're going to hear the word dust multiple times as we sing through. And when you hear the word dust, I want you to poof into dust. Poof. Show me your poofs. Dust, poof. That's exactly right. One more time. Dust, poof. It's exactly right. And when you hear the word enough, you'll hear this word twice. I want you to find someone in a different pew and give them a high five. So practice now. Find your person. Find your person in a different pew. Give them a high five. We're connecting because only together are we enough. A high five. High five with someone in a different pew. That's exactly right. We are connecting beyond our borders. All right. So we've got our dust, poof,
and are enough our high fives. Let's see how we do together. Our skin is the stuff of the stars. Our breath is the breath of the dinosaurs. And the water in this blood of ours turns mountains into dust. We circle around the sun, living lives in a world that's just begun. And when our time living lives on this world is done, we return into the dust. Cause all there is all there's ever been. That will have to be enough. Yeah, look at those high fives. Oh, we return into the dust. Oh, we are so little and so much. As the universe expands, we do our best to the best
coming
we can. Cause all there is
coming
all there's ever been. That will have to be enough. Beautiful. Thank you all so much. Great technique. Excellent technique. The poofing, the high fives. At this time, our children and youth will continue their worship in their classrooms. So I encourage all children and youth in ninth grade and younger to dismiss through those doors back there. Find the person with your sign and head off to your class. You'll worship there. We'll worship here. It is so good to be together. Together, we have enough.
Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to that land where I'm bound. Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to that land. Come and go with me to that land where I'm bound. There'll be freedom. There'll be freedom in that land. There'll be freedom in that land. There'll be freedom in that land where I'm bound. There'll be freedom in that land. There'll be freedom in that land. There'll be freedom in that land where I'm bound. Let's do one more. There'll be justice. There'll be justice in that land. There'll be justice in that land. There'll be justice in that land where I'm bound. There'll be justice in that land. There'll be justice in that land. There'll be justice in that land where I'm bound.
Good morning. My name is Malia. I use she, her pronouns. I'm going to do this just like that. And I'm one of your worship associates and also one of your resident seminarians, and it's always a pleasure to be with you. The moment that I first felt my own turning, I was sitting on the chancel at the long-term care center singing the hymn, Here I Am, Lord. I was surprised to find myself tearing up. Surprised because I had just spent the last hour stewing in my own theological juices. I was kind of agitated because, for one thing, I turns out really dislike the traditional Christian images of the sacred as monarch, ruler, king, even Lord. But worse than that, to be honest, I was at the front of the room concocting arguments for why the words of the liturgy that I was listening to were destructive, harmful, maybe even wrong. But in that moment of turning, the words suddenly and quite unexpectedly gave way to a shared experience of the holy. As part of my training for ministry, I'm currently completing an internship in chaplaincy, spending about 2 days each week providing for the spiritual needs of the residents of a suburban long-term care center. The residents are all there because of their complex medical needs, and many of them are on hospice, meaning that our goal as a care team is no longer to cure, but to provide comfort during the final months of their lives. As a chaplain, I serve people of all faiths and none, but in that context, spiritual care usually does include Christian prayer. For the first few weeks, I said the phrase, "You'll be in my prayers," over and over, in an awkward performance of what I sadly feared to be a poorly cast role of Chaplain Malia. I'm gonna admit, I wasn't totally sure what I meant by that phrase, "You'll be in my prayers," at first at least. It seemed like a nice thing to say, so I said it. Seemed like what people expected me to say, and I was hoping the ritual would eventually make for spiritual practice. That morning on the chancel, something shifted when I heard the words, "Here I am, Lord. It is I, Lord. I have heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart." Most of the words of this hymn aren't actually reflective of my personal beliefs, but I looked out at the people gathered that day and saw the closed eyes of many familiar faces, so filled with longing and listening, not with their ears, but with their spirits, for the call, what I imagine to be a calling back home. It reminded me of the scripture that I had been reading that week, the Tao Te Ching, which in one translation reads, "Once the whole is divided, the parts need names. There are already enough names. One must know when to stop. Knowing when to stop averts trouble. Tao in the world is like a river flowing home to the sea." At that moment, when I stopped listening so hard to the words, I realized that I was praying for them and with them. I pray for them when I meditate in the morning, as I struggle through my very amateur Tai Chi Chuan forms in the evening, and when I carry them in my own heart, as I do today. The voices were different, but I think we were listening for the same call. And maybe there are enough names. The important thing is that we know that we aren't alone. We know that we are holding it together. I think praying here with you every week is doing its work on me too. It seems to be working on many of us because I notice that each week we seem to bring more of our fears, our hopes, our longing for connection, love, and justice in the world here to each other. So now I invite each of you into this time of communal prayer, a time of listening with our spirits, which begins with closing our eyes or softening our gaze, and together taking a deep and meaningful breath. Take a moment. What are your longings today? Who are you carrying in your heart with love, celebration, or tenderness? We're gathered here to collectively hold these longings joys and sorrows, whether you speak them aloud, share in the chat, or simply place a hand over your heart. After each person shares, we'll say in unison, "You are not alone. We are holding it together." And with that, the circle is open. For a brother far away who is suffering, "You are not alone. We are holding it together."
For psychological safety, for all who attend any type of faith.
For psychological safety, for all, "You are not alone. We are holding it together." For those struggling with addiction, "You are not alone. We are holding it together." We pray for all people of the world who are frightened, besieged, silenced, or grieving, victims of war, oppression, and neglect. "You are not alone. We are holding it together." As we close this circle, we pray that we remain open to the call of love and wisdom in whatever voice we may hear it. We pray that we remember that we are never alone. We are but one drop in that great river, ever flowing home to the sea. May it be so. Amen.
We have arrived together at the moment in our service where we make time for the spiritual practice of generosity. I am not going to say a lot this Sunday about our annual giving campaign because we celebrated its midpoint last week. Perhaps it's near to the end point. My point here is that we are not quite done. We are getting ever closer. And if, for whatever reason, you have still forgotten to make your commitment to this year's annual giving campaign, if your envelope is still sitting on your table, if you are someone that, like me, keeps thinking, "Oh yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow," maybe today's tomorrow. Maybe this is your opportunity. So I encourage you to please let us know. Let us know what your commitment to support the ministries of this church is for the next fiscal year. This morning's offering, if you were here during the first service, you know that Dr. Glenn Thomas and I got a little carried away with our puns. Okay. I might have been incited a little bit because this morning's offering goes to support the work of Habitat for Humanity. I'm curious how many of you have been part of one of the many builds with Habitat that we have participated in over the years. I'm seeing lots of hands go up. Folks, this is one of, one of the long-standing commitments of this congregation. Habitat for Humanity is an organization that we partner with in many ways, and in particular these last few months have been working to rebuild our habit of showing up at work sites and doing the work of building housing for all of the many reasons that it has positive impacts in the lives of the families that inhabit those homes and the wider community. Today's offering goes to support this incredibly important ministry that the church is part of. By supporting Habitat, you are supporting not just the individuals that are showing up on work sites, you are helping to pay for drywall and 2x4s and screws and nails and paint and cinder blocks and all of the many other things that go into building a house and to building community. And so I invite you both to be as generous as you can as the baskets come around, and also knowing that Habitat is one of our opportunities for engagement in which absolutely no experience is necessary. You don't have to know anything about hanging drywall or painting or anything like that. It is a concrete way that you can be involved in the work of building housing, building community, expressing the care and the love of this congregation. So as the baskets come around, I encourage you to be as generous as you're able, and if you are able to also check out our website, sign up for one of the upcoming builds. And with that, I invite the ushers to please come forward.
Pilgrim of sorrow, I'm left in this wide world alone. No hope have I for tomorrow, so I've decided to make heaven my tossed and driven, Lord. Sometimes I don't know where to roam. But I've heard of a city called heaven, and I've decided to make it my mother. Is already in glory, and my father's still walking in sin. My brothers and sisters won't own me because I am trying to get in. I'm tossed and driven, Lord. Sometimes I don't know where to roam. But I've heard of a city called heaven. I've heard of a city called heaven. And I've decided to make it my home.
Our first reading this morning is an excerpt from Wash Your Hands by Dorie Midnight, written in 2020. Wash your hands like you are washing the only teacup left that your great-grandmother carried across the ocean, like you are washing the hair of a beloved who is dying, like you are washing the feet of Grace Lee Boggs, Beyonce, Jesus, your auntie, Audre Lorde, Mary Oliver. You get the picture. Like the water is poured from a jug your best friend just carried for 3 miles from the spring they had to climb a mountain to reach. Like water is a precious resource made from time and miracle. In the middle of the night, when you wake up with terror in your belly, it is time to think about stardust and geological time. Redwoods and dance parties, mushrooms remediating toxic soil. It is time to care for one another, to pray over water, to wash away every fear every time we wash our hands. Our second reading is excerpted from John 13, yes, from the Christian Bible, written between 90 and 100 CE. Then Jesus poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. After he had washed their feet and put on his robe, he had returned to the table. He said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. I give you a new commandment that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. But by this everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another."
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, help me stand, I am tired, I am weak, I am worn. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on through the night. Take my hand, precious Lord, my way grows drear, precious Lord, linger near. When my life is almost gone, hear my cry. Precious Lord, lead me home. day is past and gone. Oh, at the river I stand, guide my feet, guide my hand, hold my hand, precious Lord, lead me home. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home.
It was almost exactly 4 years ago that I first read that Dory Midnight poem. Remember what was happening? 2020? We'd all just started what we thought would be a short little while of sheltering in place. We were collectively obsessed with bleaching surfaces, hand sanitizer, toilet paper, droplets, washing our hands all the time. At the United Church of Christ Church where I was serving, it was also Holy Week, the week before Easter when we moved through the trajectory of Jesus' last week of life and death. The first service of that week is called Maundy Thursday. It's the night Christians honor the Last Supper, on the night before Jesus was killed by the state for his radical anti-imperial organizing and for disrupting the flow of capital. A meal together clearly was not happening for us. We were all online. But it's also the night when Christians will often participate in a ritual of washing each other's hands or feet in remembrance of Jesus' commandment to love one another. Normally, this was a profoundly tender and small service at the church I served. Precious Lord, take my hand, often played in the background as we literally took each other's hands into our own to wash. I was always too squeamish and frankly too young and female to feel comfortable with that foot washing part, but the hand washing broke my heart open every time. Look at your hands now for a moment. Look at the hands of the person sitting near you. Hands hold thousands of stories of our own lives and of the ancestors whose DNA shapes the contours too of those hands. Washing each other's hands in warm, soapy water was a way of joining those stories. If only momentarily, if only momentarily, and if only symbolically. It was an embodied practice of love in the face of fear and death. So that year, 2020, when that Thursday rolled along, we all sat at our computers instead. There were easily three times the number of people who usually gathered in person for that service. We desperately knew we needed each other in those days. I had invited people to bring their own hand sanitizer to set next to a candle near their computer. I was almost 8 months pregnant, desperately trying to find a quiet room in a house that also held my two-year-old, my wife, and my mother, who was recovering from a hip surgery that had happened on the day COVID arrived in Minnesota. We spoke of the crucifixions, the deaths made possible by empires past and present. I said, We remember that on the night before Jesus was arrested by those who feared him, on the night before she was infected inside an ICE facility, on the night before he died because racism kept him from getting the health care he needed for too many years before this pandemic even began, on the night before they died without family by their side, on the night before he was crucified. I sat at my computer as I watched some of my beloved congregants in their tiny Zoom boxes squirt hand sanitizer on each other's hands in their homes and lovingly clean each other's hands as I read, "Wash your hands like you are washing the hair of a beloved who is dying, like you are washing the feet of Grace Lee Boggs, Beyonce, Jesus, your auntie, Mary Oliver. You get the picture." As I sanitized my own hands, I found myself with tears in my eyes, a release of so much. What I would have given to touch their hands, to hold our pulsing fear and love in my palms. This is not the kind of story we're used to hearing around here. I know. How are we doing? You okay? Okay. As you may have read in the Liberal this week, at the heart, the commemoration of Easter within First Universalist underscores a multifaceted understanding of resurrection, tradition, and continuity beyond physical existence. The observance serves as a poignant reminder of the cycles of life and renewal, both in the natural world and within ourselves. But this is the thing. We are missing part of the Easter story. Easter, rebirth, resurrection, none of them have meaning if we aren't also talking about death. And if we aren't also talking about the way that the empires past and present are crucifying us, and we are complicit in each other's crucifixions globally. As I was imagining myself talking to you about all of this, there was a scene from a movie many of you have likely seen that kept popping up into my head. This is how I imagine me talking about death and Jesus lands in UU land. We live in a dominant American story that does not like to get close to death or pain or loss. I don't know about you, but my inbox is full of Easter ads already for baked goods, matching children's dresses, flowers, Easter eggs. Death and pain and loss do not have a lot of mass market appeal. And we live in a dominant UU story of progress. If we have the right political analysis, if we take the right actions to live our values, if we read the right theory of change, we can bypass pain with progress. Please, I would like to. And yet the question is not if, but how we will move through death with pain in the company of loss. This week, I find myself drawn back to the rhythm of Christian Holy Week, to the magic of mushrooms also, and the work of somatic trauma healers all at once to help me and hopefully you learn to move in relationship to death and loss. Each of these holds sacred wisdom for this season that is not optional if we want to live Easter. So, let's take a break from all the Christian stuff and talk about mushrooms. It's a relatively safe thing to talk about, right? We're not eating them, we're just talking. Writer, facilitator, mediator, and doula, Adrienne Marie Brown, has lately become fascinated with mushrooms and their root systems called mycelia. They are some of her role models for all of us seeking collective wholeness in this life and in death. She writes, "Death, grief, heartache, betrayal, and all other devastation are a part of our human experience. We spend an immense amount of time trying to escape or avoid these inevitable human experiences. One of the most important lessons mycelia can offer us is how to turn and face the toxicity and pain in our world and find life in it. Mycelia see the potential life in everything. Everything dead and alive goes into the soil and gets processed into life. When we understand that our pain and grief are part of our aliveness, part of how we learn to be, and part of how we ultimately contribute to the life of our planet, we can learn to eat everything too and make it fuel. We can recycle and upcycle everything because it is all material, data, content, source. We can make death into life. What deaths and heartaches are you trying to avoid instead of metabolizing? What do you want to just scroll past? Can we make space to hold all of this gently in our shared root system instead? Can we make time to be called to account by the anguish? Can we stretch our hearts wider and wider like networks of mycelium connecting trees across the forest floor so that we remember we too are not alone, but holding it together? I want to be mycelium when I grow up. I want to become less afraid to compost my own stories, more awed by my body's simultaneous decay and persistence, more willing to make a pathway of my heart's vulnerability to those around me. Let's go a little further together. Seeing as we are not actually mushrooms, how do we metabolize death and pain in our bodies? In real time. Or in the case of all of us who survived this far into a world with COVID-19, who live with that and so many other collective traumas in our bones, how do we move through that pain so we can keep being present to life and growth? In his profoundly powerful and groundbreaking work, My Grandmother's Hands, Resmaa Menakem explains, healing trauma involves recognizing, accepting, and moving through pain, clean pain. It often means facing what you don't want to face, what you have been reflexively avoiding or fleeing. By walking into that pain, experiencing it fully and moving through it, you metabolize it and put an end to it. In the process, you also grow. Create more room in your nervous system for flow and coherence, and build your capacity for further growth. Move through pain. Let pain move through you. That's the key. Trauma and death don't live in our minds alone. They live in our bodies. They often bypass our brain's ability to intercept our response. This is by design. We don't have time to think. Our bodies just need to react to keep us alive until we are not actually being chased by death, literally. But our bodies think we are because evolution is holy magic, too. This time of year, this season of death and new life, these are seasons we have to move from our brains into our full bodies if we want to transform, rebirth, experience resurrection or revolution, whatever we want to call it. I think on a collective level, this is actually the work of the Christian liturgical season of Holy Week and Easter. Over the last year and a half, I've had the honor of being one of your ministers. And I've realized that though we are theologically and spiritually in deep alignment, I miss the embodied ritual practices of the Christian tradition that raised me and the tradition that raised this church until 1961, Christian universalism. They get me, a person who is obsessed with words, who finds profound comfort in books, in learning through my brain. They get me into my body, where healing actually lives. As I reread Resma's brilliant embodied practice of cleansing our pain in ways that actually allow it to be transformed instead of just put on hold while hurting others, I realize that these Christian rituals are actually an embodied somatic healing practice when done well. Don't worry, I have not forgotten where I am. Hello, beloved UUs. I haven't forgotten the incredible trauma these rituals themselves have imposed on too many bodies, Jewish and queer bodies in particular, some of you who sit in this very room. I see you, I love you, I know, and I'm asking us to queer our relationship to them, to take whatever tools are here that serve our liberation and leave the rest. When I was studying in seminary with Dr. James Cone, who was one of the intellectual giants of Black liberation theology, and trying to form my own queer theology of sin from within the Christian scriptures, he said to me, and I quote, "Kill the God that is hurting your people so you can take what is yours to be free." Kill the God that is hurting your people so you can take what is yours to be free. These stories are a part of our collective inheritance as UUs, so I invite each of us to do the same. I'm going to walk us through a brief meditation based on Resma's work now, to move cleanly with pain, to transform it instead of moving against it or numbing ourselves in its presence and creating dirty pain. Some might say that crucifixion is the ultimate act of systemic, imperial, dirty pain, the kind that comes out sideways, processed through other people's bodies instead of being felt in our own bones, held gently and released. So let us practice now together. We are going to sit with a moment of pain. I invite you to choose gently and carefully, or if it's all just too much, don't do it. Sit in the quiet care of your own heart in a way that serves your liberation. For this practice, you might choose a moment from our collective experience of living through the pandemic over the last 4 years, if that feels safe enough in your body now. We are still feeling the reverberations of that time in this community. We have seen in the conflict in this community how some of our pain has come out dirty, sideways on each other. Sitting with that time's pain is a worthy option for healing this morning. I'm going to sit with the image of my body, full with the memory I started with today, sitting at my computer, leading services for Holy Week, pregnant, with a baby and anxiety. It's not a moment of active harm. It's a moment that holds all of that time with realness and also tenderness. I invite you to find a memory to sit with now. Get quiet and breathe. Put your hands on your lap or your knees. Find in your body's memory a source of calm, the feeling of a favorite cozy place to sit, or a beloved pet, or the person whose presence is home. Let that uncomfortable memory and the safety you are holding in your body sit together inside of you. Notice your body here and now. Maybe you feel your shirt on your belly, your back against a pew, your tongue on the roof of your mouth. As any thoughts or feelings arise, bring yourself back to these sensations of your body in the here and now. This is how you settle your nervous system. And into that settled body, invite that memory of pain, of discomfort to persist. Feel the discomfort. See if you can find it in your body. Maybe even place a hand on it so you can hold it with tenderness as you breathe, as you soothe yourself, as you notice the pain. Don't try to fix it. Just bear witness to yourself and your pain as you honor it. This is Holy Week in your body. And now comes Easter. Stand up or rise, literally, in whatever way your body would like to do right now, and discharge the energy of bearing witness to your pain. Stretch. Do what a zebra does when it outruns a lion and shake it out. Notice the people around you. You are not your pain. You are not alone. We are holding it together. Stay standing. Feel your toes in your shoes. You have toes. How magical is that? You have a body that is alive and healing slowly every day. Imagine yourself at that Barbie dance party, but this time nobody is pretending that death isn't real. We are dancing our way alongside death, cleansing pain into the power of life. You are like irrepressible thoughts of death, Barbie. You are like the mycelium networks. And maybe even like Jesus. Amen.
For all that is our life, we sing our thanks and praise. For all life is a gift, which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad. For needs which others serve, for services we give, for work and its rewards, for hours of rest and love, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for sorrow we must bear, for failures, pain, and loss, for each new thing we learn, for fearful hours that pass, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for all that is our life, we sing our thanks and praise For all life is a gift, which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad.
In the middle of the night, when you wake up with terror in your belly, it is time to think about stardust and geological time, redwoods and dance parties and mushrooms remediating toxic soil. It is time to care for one another, to pray over water, to wash away fear. Every time we wash our hands, may it be so, may we make it so.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting our ministry. Text FIRSTUNIV, that's FIRSTUNIV, to 73256 to make your gift. If you are able to join us in person for Sunday worship, we'd love to see you in church. To learn more, visit us online at firstuniversalistchurch.org.